into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
That's what makes him the ultimate football man. The great John Giles there. The Premier League is back. Liverpool start their defence on Saturday evening against Leeds United. Once again at an empty Anfield. And live and exclusive Premier League commentary is back here on Off the Ball every Sunday. Two live matches starting this Sunday. We've got Spurs against Everton from 4:30. Myself and Brian Kerr will be at that one. And first up at 2:00, it is West Brom against Leicester. Stephen Doyle and Kenny Cunningham. Will we get a song from Kenny this year? Well, will we, Kenny?
Yeah, certainly not this evening.
Wait, what would you usually sing, Kenny?
I sing requests. Nathan, as you well know. Anything you want.
Get your requests in. 53106. Kenny Cunningham is with us for the football show. We're going to be talking about the new Premier League season. When you were joining the Ireland squad, did you have to do an initiation ceremony? Did you have to stand up in a chair and sing a song in front of everybody?
That was every trip, Nathan. That wasn't just an initiation.
for the new players who had to put up with this.
I win some good singers in that squad, Nathan. Some good musicians as
well. Yeah, you did.
You could have had our own band by the time I retired from international football.
That was the problem by the NG. Too many good singers.
Well, yeah, with some great musicians. Andy Reid was a fantastic musician. He was a great guitar player. Alan Lee could play guitar, and then obviously singing. Well, the lads were fighting each other to get on the mic.
And you just stood back and swept in at the end.
Just piled into the shadows, Nathan. You know how it goes. Left the stage to other people.
I've been busy prepping for this slot, Kenny, by trying to pick my fantasy football team. You strike me as a fantasy football aficionado.
No.
Ah, Kenny. Where do you get your kicks in life?
No, I can't be bothered at all. That's too much of a head rake.
When it came out first, did you not pick yourself?
Oh, definitely not. I don't think I ever did it, in all honesty. Remember, the only thing I did very early in my career, I remember having a bet. Like, remember you could have had like 7 home wins. Remember the basic bet in the bookies?
You could predict
maybe 7 home wins and that type of thing. I remember doing it for like a week or two. It might have been about £2 a pop. I mean, that's basically all I had left after I paid me digs money. But just got so frustrated with the whole process, Nathan. You know, teams letting you down and, you know, your bankers letting you down and I just couldn't. I couldn't sell a steady clip. From that point on, I just never bothered. And that Premier League teams, that sounds like the ultimate head wreck.
Yeah. So you put £2 in an accumulator twice and got rid of it. You can still do that. Gambling is still available, it turns out, Kenny.
Are you still allowed to gamble?
It turns out you are. So, listen, the standout game, I guess, from the opening weekend is Liverpool against Leeds. John Giles was on and has been talking quite a lot about, you know, great teams and doing back-to-back and how his Leeds team struggled and you could never put your finger on it, that it got to Christmas and then you'd sort of realise, geez, it took us too long to get going. He doesn't see that with this Liverpool team. He thinks the attitude is going to be right from day one and that you'll be able to see that on Saturday against Leeds. Would you have any concerns at all that all the success, all the plaudits of the last couple of seasons, that somehow Liverpool take their foot off the gas this season?
No, I'd agree with John in that respect. You don't get a sense of that, Nathan, from the outside looking in. Of course, the person who's best placed to make that judgment call is the manager, and he needs to get that right. I think I've said before over the summer that as long as he's satisfied in terms of the kind of mentality inside the dressing room, and that kind of drive is still there, that determination and focus that it's been evident there for the past 2 years has been their biggest strength, really, as much as we can talk about the individual qualities of some of the players, is that kind of mental fortitude, that kind of relentlessness which they've had to kind of drive on. That's been the biggest factor for me in their success. So as long as the manager's happy, that's still there. That hasn't been diluted by the success they've had last season. Then, yeah, I think it'll be more of the same from Liverpool. That's not to say, you know, they're going to get the same points total. That doesn't necessarily mean they're actually going to win the league title either, Nathan. But in terms of the mentality of the players and the group itself, I think it will be the same, because if the manager had got a sense of that maybe it wasn't, and one or two players maybe were, you know, heading into that comfort zone, I think he would have made some changes to his squad already, and he hasn't done that. So he must be satisfied with what he's seen from his players since they've come back from the break.
We know he's bought brilliantly at times with Alisson and Van Dijk, but he's also helped players get to levels that nobody expected. Somebody like Andy Robertson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's got more out of these players season on season. Can he get more out of them again this season? Are the players in that Liverpool, particularly the starting 11, are players just on the fringes that you're looking at thinking, you know what, Klopp, if he's had the impact he wants over the last month, they can have a big season and be maybe the wild card that Liverpool fans weren't expecting?
I think it's a good point you make at the start, Nathan, because some people will make the argument, well, you have to strengthen, to get better, you have to strengthen, you have to bring people in the door. But it's not always the case, because you can get kind of, you can get small improvements with the existing squad just in terms of the development of certain players within the squad. So you've mentioned the likes of Robertson, for me, is probably playing at his peak, in all honesty. Alexander-Arnold, for me, is amazingly, as he has been going forward, is productive in terms of assists in particular and goals. I still think there's a bit of improvement in the defensive side to his game. And if that was to come over the next 2 to 3 years, well, then potentially you're probably looking at the best right back in the world. So I think even within the present squad, there's small areas, small scope for improvement there. Keita in midfield, I still think there's a little bit more to come from him. Oxlade-Chamberlain with a consecutive run of games, you know, he may get a bit more this season. I think those type of players, dynamic kind of midfield players with kind of goals in them, they could actually contribute. So I think there's an argument saying Liverpool could actually improve with the existing squad with just a small little spike from those individual players in terms of performance.
It does seem as though he is settled now on his centre-back pairing, that it is Joe Gomez who's first choice alongside Virgil van Dijk. I know Joel Matip had some injuries, but pretty much from December on, when fit, Joe Gomez started. Has he got to the level yet you expected him to get to? You think back to the game against Manchester City. I know they were off, you know, they were well beaten, but they were celebrating for the week where he gets too tight to Raheem Sterling. Is he a weakness, do you look, in that Liverpool side, or is he actually a big strength at that age where there is a level of improvement to come?
Yeah, I should have mentioned him in that group of players already, which I said in terms of potential for improvement and development and mature as a player. And Joe Gomez is one of them. He's a fantastic athlete. Eats up the ground, kind of modern day centre back, really. I mean, he can, you know, he's not going to get bullied in a physical sense. His recovery is very good, and it has to be, because Liverpool kind of persists with that high line a little bit too often for me, in all honesty. But they recover so well, him and Van Dijk, such great athletes, they can probably afford to kind of roll the dice at times in terms of that high line. I think that improvement will come, well, it should come. The more games you play, the more experience you get. Generally speaking, as a centre-half, your kind of decision-making gets better. So I'm a big fan of Gomez. It has been a couple of mistakes here and there, absolutely. But I think he will get better. And I think the partnership will improve. It's always been the best partnership for me. I know Matip had his fair share of games kind of last season and did okay in the team. But for me, Gomez and Van Dijk was always the way forward for Liverpool. So the more games they get together consecutively, I think the stronger the partnership will become.
I don't know if there's any other team in world football who presses up as high as Liverpool. Like, it's not even to the halfway line. Quite often it's 5-10 yards inside the opposition half, and they just try and suffocate the life out of them. Like, when are the times that you think they're too far forward? When are the times when they should be taking a step back?
It's interesting. We have this conversation's been quite prevalent, I suppose, in terms of Bayern Munich of late, in terms of how they played in the latter stages of the Champions League, and how they left themselves quite open at times for teams to counter on them and attack the space in behind. So I think at times you could make the same argument for Liverpool. Nothing wrong with keeping a high line and pushing up the pitch and keeping the whole team compact, particularly when you're kind of pressing high up the pitch. But of course, there will be occasions when at times opposition teams will be good enough, have the technical ability to, you know, pass beyond that initial press and get people on the ball in possession with time on the ball and their head up. And that's the moment when you're keeping a high line as a defender with kind of the alarm bells ring, when you see an opposition kind of fullback or midfielder in possession of the football with his head up and no pressure on the ball. You know, that's when you've got to be heading back towards your own penalty box. There's too much space in behind. So you just got to pick and choose your moments.
I guess that's where the attitude is key as well, where the high press, where your front three and your midfielders are full of energy, but your front three are putting the pressure on the centre halves that they can't come out quickly. Liverpool have been brilliant at that for the last 3-4 years. So if there was any dip there, you'd see it quite quickly.
No, you're absolutely right. That's when you can keep the high line, when your midfielders and forward players are pressing the ball and opposition players haven't got time to get ahead of and actually make a pass and actually pick out that pinpoint pass in behind your back four. That's when it's easy to keep the high line. It's not so easy to keep the high line when opposition teams are good enough to work a player into space in possession of the football. That's always got to be the trigger then, to drop into the space in behind and almost allow the opposition to play in front of you. But you still have a good defensive shape. They still have to beat you to get into the penalty area. So it's just actually good decision making. For me, it's not a case of keeping the high line or not keeping the high line. It's just those moments in games when you just sense the opposition are in a position maybe to penetrate your back line. You've just got to recognise that. You've got to drop as a defensive unit. You've got to drop together and kind of concede the space in front and protect that all-important space in behind. And Liverpool are guilty of a little bit of that last season. I actually thought got away with it last season. It's a very small criticism, don't get me wrong, but if you're asking about the small percentage gains which Liverpool can make, we've spoken about maybe individual players who'll develop and get better. But I also think that defensive high line at times, they just need to modify that a little bit as well, just to protect themselves a little bit more.
Looking at some of the other teams who may be contenders, Chelsea have obviously spent a huge amount of money. A player potentially might leave the club, going on today's speculation, it is just speculation at this stage, is N'Golo Kante. Inter Milan seemed to have made a bid. He had a lot of injuries last season, was in and out of the side. Frank Lampard never seemed quite sure where to play him. He played him maybe on the right of a diamond at times and went with Jorginho at the base. Like, maybe I'm still thinking of 2016, 2017 N'Golo Kante, and maybe there's been a dip or something, but like, is this madness to consider selling Kante?
Yeah, I couldn't believe this when I heard it. Saw a line in the paper maybe a week or two ago, and I literally had to... I couldn't believe what I was reading. I just was maybe something's been going on there, Nathan. I don't know. Nothing's come out. He's very quiet individual, very private. Kante, you'd never get him something putting some article in the paper or whatever through his agent to get a message across. He wasn't unhappy, but Lampard hasn't been happy playing him at the base of that kind of V in midfield. I can understand it to an extent. Obviously, Lampard, he values a player in there, I think, of a high technical ability who can receive the ball from defenders and play the team kind of up the pitch. I think in some respects that's why he liked Jorginho initially when he came into the football club, but Jorginho was never the answer. I mean, Jorginho just wasn't good enough defensively to play in that position. I mean, Chelsea were never going to win a league title. I probably said it before, with Jorginho at the base of that midfield. It was just never going to happen. It took a long time for the penny to drop with Lampard with Jorginho. I think that he'll be out the door in the window as well, because he's just not good enough. He hasn't got the kind of mobility, defensive kind of noose, anticipation, you know, sense and danger to play in that area of the pitch.
Does Kante not have the passing ability for that role?
I think he's got enough. I think that's my point. So for me, Kante is the best there is in that position. We've seen that, Nathan, in Leicester jersey and obviously at Chelsea as well. The question is his passing range good enough to play that role to the level that Lampard wants? And I think it is, because I think he's underrated at Kante in terms of his pass. I mean, I don't think he needs to get on the ball and there be hitting 40-yard diagonal passes and eye the needle passes, you know, all around the pitch. All he really needs to do is get on the ball, work the ball out to fullbacks, or play little penetrating 10-15-yard balls up the pitch into those two advanced number eight positions for Chelsea. It's going to be Havertz, in all probability, Mason Mount. Those advanced midfielders, can he get them on the ball in those little pockets of space? And to do that, you're just basically punching 10, 15, 20-yard passes into those people, Nathan, to really kind of get them on the ball and get you going forward. And I think he's actually capable of doing that, Kante. I think he's a little bit underrated, his passing. So I'm very surprised. I don't know whether there's something else going on there, whether there's personal issues we're not aware of. I don't know. Maybe just feels as if he needs a move, family. You never really know what's going on behind the scenes. But from a footballing perspective, for me, he's the best option for Chelsea. He's the obvious counterbalance, Nathan, in that midfield. Kai Havertz Mount, Loftus-Cheek, whoever it is playing those two advanced midfield positions, very attack-minded players and players you want to encourage to get in contact with the front three, get into box and get those gluttony of goals which Lampard is chasing, he knows he needs. You need that counterbalance. You can't just have it with your two centre-halves. You need it in that holding midfield position. And he's as good as anybody. Billy Gilmore is a very exciting prospect, Nathan. I think he's a little bit of both. Very good footballer. Very sly, but actually quite tenacious and aggressive. So potentially 2-3 years down the road, he could be the answer. But for the here and now, they just don't have that type of player. Kovacic isn't that type of player either. Where he's going to go and spend, there could be another one there. There could be a Declan Rice on his way to the door that we don't know about, Nathan. That could be the solution. But obviously, sad to see him go, Kant. I'm a huge fan of him. He's made a big contribution to the Premiership and I'm a big fan of his ability.
Yeah, geez, he's been sensational over the last 5-6 years, what he's done. So if you're looking at, okay, we don't know who that bottom of the three is in midfield, but if you're looking at Havertz and Mount, Pulisic on the left, Werner through the middle, Ziyech on the right, and you still have the backup of the likes of, well, Olivier Giroud or Tammy Abraham, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Ziyech there. There's any amount. Hudson-Odoi as well. Is that actually an attacking lineup that could push them towards a title run?
I think that the front five potentially, can get those players that you've mentioned there between them could get the number of goals potentially which you need to win a title. I do believe that Havertz in particular, I mean, he's gone big on Havertz and the reason is he guarantees you goals, this kid. He's an absolutely wonderful player. He really is. People are going to love watching him play. I mean, he can play one of the few players, Nathan, he can occupy any of those kind of positions across the front three, and he can play in that number eight position in midfield. There's not too many of them around. His versatility, but his qualities as well. He's very graceful on the ball, wonderful left foot, but he's brave as well. He's got a physical element to his game as well, Nate. He can ride in the box. Those like surgeon runs into the box. He's a great head of the ball. He's brave as well. So he'll contribute with goals. I think the other players will as well. So I don't think there's too much wrong with that. Those players that you've mentioned, for me, they've got enough there. They've actually got enough there almost to launch a title challenge in terms of the goals that they can score. The problem is going to be, as we've spoken about, that counterbalance at the other end of the pitch in terms of that holding midfield and that central defensive partnership, and to a lesser extent, the kind of fullbacks, not so much, but that kind of spine of the team, that kind of holding midfield, kind of central defensive partnership, that axis, those three players, that defensive axis is going to be key, whether they can actually push and almost make a challenge next year for the Premiership. But if they don't get it right, well then, it'd just be a case of nudging towards the top two with no real chance of competing for the title.
The defence of Lampard last season, the defence of the defence, was that when you broke down the statistics, they conceded a lot of goals from set pieces, and the goalkeeper conceded more goals than a keeper of his calibre should have. And that those are two things that are quite easily fixable, that you get yourself a new goalkeeper, which they may well do, and that you sort out your defensive setup from set pieces. That there is no real defence for Lampard this season if he hasn't improved it. Like, he knows what the problem is, and the job, his job as manager and the coaches around him, is to go and fix that. If they haven't done that over the last 5-6 weeks, he deserves whatever criticism comes his way.
No, I think that's fair, and I think he knows that, Nathan. The kind of honeymoon period is over now. You know, it looks as if the club's going to back him in terms of transfers, although you're never quite sure. You hear a few little murmurs coming out of football club in terms of Peter Cech's influence there and small disagreements in terms of who should be heading out. You know, a lot of talk about he's a big fan of Kepa, the goalkeeper.
Right.
Doesn't particularly want to see him heading out the door of the football club. So, interesting. Always those little conflicts. It's not ideal, to be honest with you. It was a lot of talk that was an ideal partnership. Cech coming in there, his relationship with Lampard, he'd be the perfect fit. But I'm not too sure that's exactly been the case. And if there's a little bit of disagreement in terms of Chilwell, I think probably a good example, Nathan, speaking about kind of money well spent in terms of Kai Havertz, Werner and maybe Ziyech. But Chilwell's a strange one for me. 50 million for a full his pedigree. I'm very surprised. Like, I don't see the big spike in terms. What you get with Chilwell, you get a player who's tidy on the ball, who's reasonably productive in the opposition half the pitch, with chip in with his fair share. He'll never be as productive as Alonso, who was phenomenal in terms of goals and assists. And his defending for me is probably not more than average, I've got to be honest with you. So,
right.
Yeah, I scratched my head with the signing of Chilwell. I don't understand that one. But
is he a better defender than Alonso?
I think he is a better defender than Alonso because he's a better athlete. He's kind of more athletic. He's kind of more mobile. So for that reason, I think he is a better defender than Alonso, who really struggles. But, you know, 50 million for a kind of average defender, you know, who's reasonably tidy in the opposition half the pitch and chip in with a few assists here and there for me is like is a very inflated price. And, you know, I could name at least half a dozen other fullbacks around Europe who are easily a better player than him. So that's a strange, but that's only in isolation. I think you're right, the pressure comes. He has to get Silva's come in, which I understand, a player of his experience. A slight gamble, he's never played in this league. Nathan, probably not at his peak either. So he's taking a calculated risk there and bringing him in. But if he hits the ground running and can adapt quickly and be that kind of presence that provide that bit of leadership, maybe organisation as well on the pitch, he'll be a big help. But the problem is, I don't think there's a natural fit to go alongside him either. I think there's an argument for shipping out the other three centre-halves and going and get another top-quality centre-half. I really do. I mean, Zuma, Anderson, a couple of years ago, was a big fan of Christensen, thinking he was going to break through.
Hans Christian Andersen, different guy.
Either of them, you know what I mean. But he's a player that, like, very comfortable on the very comfortable on the ball, very tidy, easy on the eye, but just hasn't really developed that physical element to his game, like in terms of really physically imposing himself. Zuma can, you know, makes mistakes in and around the box. His decision making isn't the best. And Rudiger, who last year you looked at and thought, yeah, maybe he's the one you could kind of build a team around, but he's flattered to deceive. And Lampard left him out of the team at the end of last season. So, again, for me, I don't think there's a natural partner to play alongside Silva. Tomori, for me, the young kid, is probably the one with the best potential. But they need a partnership now, Nathan.
I was just about to ask, because Tomori, I think, has been strongly linked with a loan move maybe to Everton, which is the route Kurt Zuma went a couple of years ago, and like at Stamford Bridge a couple of times this year, and Tomori played, and he almost looked the best of them. But is it, you don't think he's ready for that step up just yet?
Well, if that's the case, and they're seriously thinking of loaning out for you, that is the case. They don't think he's ready yet. So then you're looking at, Zuma or Rudiger, probably the more experienced player, Rudiger, to play alongside Silva. So for me, still potential question marks there, plus the question of the goalkeeper as well. What's going to happen there? I mean, Lampard's pretty much, although he hasn't come out publicly in terms of his actions, he's pretty much said, look, I've lost confidence in this goalkeeper. I don't think he's good enough. So that has to resolve itself. I can't see them starting the season with Kepa between the posts. But like you say, Nathan, not as easy. You've got to get a world-class goalkeeper in. But easier said than done. I don't think they'll sell Kepa. For me, not the obvious answer, but you could see Kepa maybe just to, if there's issues there with Czech, he doesn't want to sell him. You could see him maybe going on loan Kepa for a year or 2 years to another club, maybe a top European club, regain his confidence, and they could protect their asset in that respect in terms of his value. And at the same time, go and spend and get a top-class goalkeeper in and not have to take a big hit in terms of a transfer fee by selling Kepa for 30, 40 million. You know, you'd be writing off about £35 million. So that might be a way around it. But who's that goalkeeper? Where is he? Where is that top-class goalkeeper around Europe that they're going to be able to get in?
A lot of these players have just arrived in the last couple of weeks. I know they did some business early, but the way the season has gone, different players are returning to pre-season training at different times, and even several of the players, such as Thiago Silva, doesn't look as though they're going to play this weekend. As a player in pre-season, how difficult is it when you have different teammates, new teammates arriving in at different times? They're going to have pretty much two games a week every week of the season, so there's not going to be a huge amount of time in the training ground. How big an issue is that for a lot of these clubs, that Frank Lampard doesn't have the hours he wants with these key players he's brought in on the training ground before the season starts?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I mean, these are difficult circumstances at the moment in terms of the footballing calendar, quite unique. So in an ideal scenario, Nathan, you know, you're rolling into pre-season start of July, you've got that kind of six-week period, the majority of the squad's together. Yeah, the signings come in here and there, but generally speaking, you've got a good period of time to work with the players. I think it is important, without a doubt, it is a factor, Nathan, just in terms of the players acclimatising themselves to their different teammates, just a new environment on a lot of different levels, to be honest. New city, the whole thing, even from the tactical setup in terms of what you're asking the players to do. You can roll out a few pre-season friendlies, and gradually over that pre-season period, players adapt, they understand what's required of them, they get comfortable in their surroundings. So by the time the season starts, you know, they're almost integrated into the setup. This is going to be different this year, not just for Chelsea, but for a lot of the clubs, Nathan. There's going to be more players coming in. How long is the transfer window? Is it another month?
Another month. I think it's, 5th, 6th of October?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's going to be chasing players. A couple of clubs there haven't even dipped their toe in the water yet in terms of their signings coming in. So everybody's going to be in the same boat, to be honest with you. So you just got to adapt. It's as simple as that. Big responsibility on the coaching staff as well, players coming in, quality of the sessions and getting your message across and all those type of things. So, it'll be interesting. A little bit hard and scared, and you're right, in terms of number of fixtures and obviously the players coming in and out, etc. Things almost won't calm down until that transfer window shuts maybe mid-October.
We're going to take a quick break. 53106 is the text number. Kenny Cunningham is live with us this evening. Colm has been in touch. Little ad break challenge for you, Kenny. Ask Kenny to do the Italian 90 anthem, Nessun Dorma. That's coming right after these ads. Sensational, Kenny. That is sensational. You've got a hell of a voice. Go on, give us the final. Give us the final bit.
Back there. I'll give you a final bit of applause.
Yeah. And that's the Pavarotti version we went with. Anytime I hear that now, it reminds me of...
I thought that was Johnny Jones.
Yeah, that's what we should have got him to do when Leicester won the league. When still one of the best Premier League moments ever is Andrea Bocelli standing there at the King Power Stadium, Claudio Ranieri beside him, singing Nessun Dorma. Because I remember that week when I heard that this is what they're going to do as they await getting the Premier League trophy. I thought, oh, no. This is going to be the cheesiest sight. And then you're just, I think it was the tears in Ranieri's eyes. It was just glorious.
That was his win bonus. Nathan.
You've no heart, Kenny. You've no heart. Some people are just in it for the love of the game.
Like yourself, Nathan.
Exactly. Who are you excited about? Listen, there's not going to be a Leicester City, but of the teams outside the top six who we'll spend all season talking about, who are you excited about? Who have you looked at the transfer window and thought, you know what, maybe they can do something a little bit different this season?
Yeah, like I said, it's still that month to go, so you know, you got to be careful making too many predictions. Wolves is a team I've really enjoyed watching play now in the last couple of years. Last year in particular, up until the last maybe, you know, month of the season, you know, you still have made an argument for them, you know, making one of those Champions League positions. I think Nuno's kind of, his body of work there at Wolves stands up with anybody's over the past 2 years. It's, what he's done is amazing. I think how he sets up his team, tackle set up the team is really impressive. Hugely impressive. I think the improvement in individual players under his tutelage was a testament to his qualities as a manager, I think as a coach as well. Just love the way he sets his teams up in terms of how they attack, you know, defend as well in numbers. Hard to break down, but really kind of break out with pace, and very exciting to watch as well. High energy at times, dynamic, quick players. I think he's bought very well. Bit of a surprise, Matt went out the door. He allowed Matt to go out the door in the summer, because Matt was pretty integral to the way the team played. It'd be interesting to see who he sees filling that void. But he's brought the young boy in from Porto. I haven't seen a lot of him play. Spent a lot of money on him. But you'd have to back him now, because the players he spent money on in the past, he's done fantastically well. Traore is probably the best example of that. He's absolutely turned his career around. I think he's a great example. I think that shows you how good a manager he is. That lad came to the football club, Nathan, a bit of turmoil. You could tell he was shown the door at Aston Villa, shown the door at Middlesbrough. You know, a lot of whispers that, like, oh, this bull in a china shop. This fella's just kind of uncoachable. You know, quick,
it looked like
strong.
He was that Usain Bolt experiment in football. That what would he look like if he actually got a contract? But yeah, like the way he's turned around has been exceptional.
Amazing. And I read a quote, actually, I remember listening to Nuno talking about Traore during the season, and I think that was that question was kind of put to him a little bit, what we've been talking about there. And he responded by saying, he said, look, at Wolves, at this football club, he said, we never give up on a player. And it was a pretty simple thing to say, but it kind of really resonated with me. I thought, oof, wow, that's a powerful statement. That, as a player, like, that's exactly what I what I want to hear when you walk in the doors of a football club. A manager says, I'm going to make you better. It doesn't matter how long it takes. I'm going to turn you into a better player. I'm going to put the time in. I'm going to invest in you. So that's what he's doing with Traore. He's getting it back now. But you could say that about a number of the players in his team. So I'm really interested what they can do next season going forward. I think Wolves are in a great place.
The Matt Doherty move is probably something we're going to see quite a bit of because of the ownership structure at Wolves, where George Mendes is very involved, and then Jose Mourinho is one of George Mendes' clients. Matt Doherty is one of George Mendes' clients, and he's so involved with Wolves and bringing all these Portuguese players, and has an involvement with a lot more, that some of these players may end up moving on, even though Wolves would like to keep them and feel they need them there to progress. So the supporters, I guess, are just going to have to accept that. If they can keep Jair Moutinho, it looks as though he is going to stay, and Ruben Neves in the midfield. I'm always confused by these two, because in one way it feels like the best midfield duo in the Premier League. That, like, if Manchester United had these two for the last two or three seasons, they wouldn't have had half these problems. And then sometimes you watch them in the game where, I know they were tired when they're knocked out by Sevilla in the Europa League, and they just struggle to control a game like that. Like, are they at the very top level, those two?
I think Neves is. I think he's developing into a really top-class player. I think Moutinho, I think you got a bit of an argument there. I wouldn't be a huge fan of Moutinho. I think he's kind of tidy, good technique. Don't get me wrong, experienced player. But I've actually been impressed with Dendonker, who came in. He's another sign that came in under the radar. Not for a huge amount of money, Nathan, but he's really strengthened that area of the pitch. I mean, Wolves predominantly will always play with the back three and the two wing-backs, but they kind of deviate between a kind of a midfield two and a front three, and a midfield three and a front two. And he kind of flips it over every so often, depending, I think, on the opposition and how he sees it, the manager. So bringing Dendonker in, he's a different type of player to the other two very technical players that you've mentioned, Nathan. Dendonker, a bit more of an athlete, a bit more physical. You could say a little bit cruder in his approach, but he's great legs, great energy. So he's kind of complemented those two for me in midfield. He's been a very good sign. And so, yeah, I think you're right. But I think maybe areas of the pitch where they could improve. I think maybe you could suggest maybe another top-class midfielder to play alongside Neves if you're being greedy.
And I guess they do have the problem with the wing-backs now, because Doherty is gone and Johnny is out for the season in all likelihood. And as you say, like, they were so pivotal to everything that Wolves did over the last couple of seasons.
He must have a solution, though, Nathan. Mm. He's that type of manager. He must have a solution. I don't buy into this. I know the George Mendes thing there, but no way. There's no way Matt's been allowed to leave the football club if the manager didn't want him to go. I'm not buying into that at all. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously the manager's...
It's how modern-day football works, Kenny.
Yeah, I know. I understand. Yeah, I hear the kind of potential conflict there, but I look at that new one now. He's a strong character, strong individual. Why would he kind of weaken his side by letting such an integral player go unless he felt as if he had the answer somewhere else? The answer might be Traore. I look at Traore sometimes and I think, you know, potentially as a right wing back. He's not a natural defender, but operating in that right wing back position, Nathan, going forward, I mean, absolutely frightening. And if he can just maybe tidy up the defensive side to his game, maybe feels as if Traore potentially might be the answer in that right wing back role. That'd be very interesting. But Marcel's come in from Lyon as well. I saw that one. Only £1.5 million, Nathan's buying. He looked tidy for Lyon, the Champions League. He played well in that defensive line for Lyon. They play that back three as well, coincidentally. Mm. So he kind of gives him a little bit of additional cover across the defensive line as well. So, yeah, I like what he's doing there, Nuno. But if you're asking me any other teams, I mean, Leeds are the ones, I suppose, really, that kind of jump out at you. I mean, I'm guessing everybody must be talking about him. I mean, the Leeds support back over in Dublin and in Ireland in general haven't had a huge amount of time. They've been in hibernation, for quite some time, but it's great to see him back. And to come back under this manager playing the type of football which they are, I would have been interested to listen to John speak. I haven't listened to John speak about what he's seen of the Leeds team over the past couple of years under Bielsa, what he thinks of the brand of football, the style of football that they're playing. But it's from what I've seen, I haven't seen a huge amount. I've seen them play, Nathan, but I haven't seen effectively week in, week out. And with the additions that they've made over the past couple of weeks, it looks as if he's strengthening the right areas of the pitch up front. They needed reinforcements up front, and he's gone and done that. Rodrigo's a good player coming in from Valencia. Costa's come in from Wolves. Centre-half has come in from Freiburg, isn't he? So it looks as if he's consolidating the areas of the pitch that he needed to. But the style of play, the kind of invention, that they, the kind of bravery which they play with, Nathan, that's going to be the same. So I can't wait to see that kind of explode onto the Premiership stage.
Yeah, the conversation you'd have about Premier League promoted sides probably changed over the last decade or so. There was always a sense when teams came up, you keep it tight and you survive whatever way is possible. Whereas now, football of fields has changed, that actually you're expecting Leeds to come up, they'll stick to their game plan, they'll try and play football and they'll trust themselves that actually the best way of staying up is by scoring a lot of goals and putting teams under pressure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but that's the kind of ethos, the style of play. I mean, look at Sheffield. I could flip that back on you. So Sheffield United last year came up with an unbelievable season they had, Nathan. Now they didn't come up and go particularly kind of gung ho and kind of, you know, flood players in the forward areas of the pitch. And
but they didn't really change anything either, did they?
So my point is they had a very solid defensive lineup. I know there was a lot of talk about their wide defenders, you know, getting themselves into overlapping and underlapping positions, but they never really got themselves out of balance. And when they dropped into their defensive shape, that kind of back five and narrow midfield three, front two, you know, good compact shape, they were kind of very difficult to break down, kept a lot of clean sheets. So that was a big part of their success last year for me, Sheffield United, the kind of defensive setup of the team. But Leeds look as if they're going to do it a slightly different way. No right or wrong, I suppose, Nathan. You know, one man's wine is another man's poison, I suppose. I'm probably more the... My mindset is always, I look at a team, it's always balance in terms of committing players in the forward areas, but never leaving yourself susceptible. Counter-attack was, you know, transitions in the modern game can absolutely kill you. Teams can break so quickly. So for me, it's always about that kind of happy balance, that happy medium between, you know, attacking and committing players in the forward areas, but never leaving yourself open to kind of counter-attack and leaving your defenders isolated 1v1. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how that pans out for Leeds. And such a shame, really. We're not going to see supporters inside Elland Road.
It really is.
Anfield at the weekend. I mean, you can just picture Anfield at the weekend. I mean, I'm not talking about the game, I'm talking about the stands. That kind of sea of red, you know what I mean, all around the ground. And then that contrast with those Leeds, those white Leeds jerseys in the corner. Such a shame we're not going to kind of feel that energy off the crowd at the weekend.
It's prediction time, Kenny. I know the transfer window still has a month to go.
Do you want 7 home wins?
But you guys, 7, yeah. That's what we got to start doing. Kenny Cunningham's weekend accumulator. Listeners, you may not have heard of this thing before, an accumulator, but you can pick 7 different teams in 7 different games and just pick one of them to win. And if they all win, you win big. It's genius. Kenny hasn't done it now in 15 years is the problem, but maybe he's back. Do you want to do your 7-team accumulator, Kenny?
Fulham Arsenal. Not going back there.
Come on. Fulham Arsenal, give me one.
Oh, I'd have to fancy Arsenal.
Palace Southampton.
Oof. Draw.
Liverpool Leeds.
Draw.
Geez, the odds on this are going to be good. West Ham Newcastle.
If you go for 7 draws, I think the odds are better. So I could end up doing that.
West Ham Newcastle. Come on, let's get through this quick.
Away win.
West Brom Leicester.
Away win.
Spurs Everton.
Draw.
And you can have one of either Sheffield United against Wolves or Brighton against Chelsea.
I'll take Chelsea to win.
All right, we'll get that up. We'll listen back. We'll get that up, Kenny. We'll be back to you on Monday to see how you got on. Give us your season-long predictions then. Who's going to win the league?
No, I never make those. You come back to me October the 10th.
Anybody can make a prediction on October 10th. You can change it then.
You can't make a reasonable prediction with the amount of business can be done, players who can come in and out of the hour between now and then. But I'll say this much. I think next year and possibly the next 2 to 3 years, Nathan, is going to be the most exhilarating in the Premiership, certainly up the top end. That's kind of top 6-8 position. I think it's going to be as good as we've ever seen. I think the competition is going to be absolutely fierce. And during that period, that next 2-3 years, I think the likes of Chelsea, Manchester United have come on so strong. I don't remember since the Premiership era, I don't remember maybe 3 or 4 teams going at it for the Premiership race. Maybe you'd know better than me. We've always had a bit of a ding-dong between 2 teams traditionally, even kind of Manchester United, Arsenal or whoever. I know Leicester had that season. Manchester City, obviously, of late. But I never remember kind of, you know, three or more teams kind of really going at it into the last month of the season. I think potentially we could have that over the next couple of years. And the kind of the investment Chelsea, United in particular, and even the strides that Wolves are making, Leicester, I think they're only going to get stronger as well. Tottenham, Arsenal, I think there's some good managers for me. The top clubs now have got some good managers. Young managers are only going to get better and improve as well. So for me, it lends itself to the argument that over the next couple of years, I think it's going to be absolutely dynamic what's happening at the top of the table. I think it's going to be great to watch.
Kenny Cunningham, 7-up, we're going to call it, every week, exclusive and off the ball, if the first one comes in. Otherwise, we probably forget about it and never do it again, Kenny.
Yeah, let's do that.
Here, you're with us on Sunday, live and exclusive Premier League commentary, back on Off the Ball. Kenny is going to be with Stephen Doyle, one for the Dubs. You'll all enjoy it. You're on from 2 o'clock, and then myself and Brian Kerr on from 4:30 with Spurs against Everton. Cheers, Kenny. We'll talk to you then.
Nice one, Nathan. Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.